Hare Krishna. So welcome to everyone this morning. We continue reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. Today we're reading from Canto number 1, chapter number 18, entitled Parikshit Cursed by a Brahmin Boy. And we're reading from 42 and 43. So I'll just read 42 myself, and then we'll do 43 responsively. So we're continuing the narration of how Sringi impetuously cursed Parikshit, who was a qualified king, a Raja Rishi, and what the effects of that were. Text number 42. Translation. Oh my boy, your intelligence is immature, and therefore you have no knowledge that the king, who is the best among human beings, is as good as the personality of Godhead. He is never to be placed on an equal footing with common men. The citizens of the state live in prosperity, being protected by his unsurpassable prowess. So text number 43. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. My dear boy, the Lord who carries the wheel of a chariot is represented by the monarchical regime. And when this regime is abolished, the whole world becomes filled with thieves, who then at once vanquish the unprotected subjects like scattered lambs. Purport. According to the Srimad Bhagavatam, the monarchical regime represents the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead. The king is said to be the representative of the absolute personality of Godhead because he is trained to acquire the qualities of God to protect the living beings. The battle of Kurukshetra was planned by the Lord to establish the real representative of the Lord, Maharaj Yudhisthira. As an ideal king, thoroughly trained by culture and devotional service with the martial spirit, makes a perfect king. Such a personal monarchy is far better than the so-called democracy of no training and responsibility. The thieves and rogues of modern democracy seek election by misrepresentation of votes, and the successful rogues and thieves devour the mass of population. One trained monarch is far better than hundreds of useless ministerial rogues, and it is hinted herein that by abolition of a monarchical regime like that of Maharaj Parikshit, the mass of people become open to many attacks of the age of Kali. They are never happy in an overly advertised form of democracy. The result of such a kingless administration is described in the following verses. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So with the permission of Holiness Dayananda Maharaj, all the Vaishnavas, try to share some words with you. Sringi made a massive mistake. To make mistakes is a feature of the conditioned soul. Sringi, however, when we look closely, represents something which we may have to be very careful of within ourselves. The Bhagavatam is very, very humbling because the Bhagavatam is not simply a story of 5,000 years ago, but the Bhagavatam is the story of our life. Once we were coming back from Leicester Rath Yatra once, and we got stuck in a traffic jam. So this was quite some years ago, maybe even 20 years ago, maybe. So at that time, no one had their smartphones. So then we decided that we'd learn a verse in the car, stuck in a traffic jam, what to do, learn a verse, make use of the time. So one devotee had the bright idea to learn the verse in the 16th chapter, which describes the six demoniac qualities. It's like, it's not a verse you would normally think that, okay, let's recite this. I don't know, maybe he was thinking like we're all succumbing to road rage or something. But so we decided to learn this verse, the six demoniac qualities. So there we were, stuck in a traffic jam, and no one had a book or a phone, so one person was saying it and everyone else was just repeating it. Dambo darpo bimanascha krodha paryushameva cha agyanam cha bijatasya parthasam padamasurim. Dambo darpo bimanascha krodha paryushameva cha agyanam cha bijatasya parthasam padamasurim. So it was just like constant for like, I don't know, 15-20 minutes. Just on a side note, I never looked at that verse for many years after, and after 3 years, someone said the verse, and immediately I was able to finish the verse. And that's the power of hearing. Just if you're thinking of how to learn verses, try do it without a book and just listen. Anyway, that's a side note. We were learning the six demoniac qualities. And one thing I think is very, very interesting about these six demoniac qualities. What are they? In this verse at least. Dumbo. Dumbo means? Not Dumbo. Dumbo means pride. Darpo. What does darpo mean? Arrogance. Arrogance. Abhiman. Abhiman means conceit. Conceit is just actually an intensified form of false pride. Krodha, anger. Agyanam, ignorance. But the sixth one is very interesting, because normally when we look at the demoniac qualities, the sixth quality mentioned by Krishna in this verse, generally, you never find it anywhere else. But Krishna, in the Gita, when he's talking about six demoniac qualities, he mentions this as the sixth one. And what is that? Parushyam. And apart from Gaur Krishna Prabhu, who knows what Parushyam means as a demoniac quality? It's interesting. None of us, it wouldn't come to mind. This is what Krishna... Normally, when we think of the six demoniac qualities, say like lust, anger, greed, envy, pride, illusion, madness, or, you know, there's a general list. This quality never seems to come. But Krishna mentions it in the Gita. Anyone know? No. See, interesting. The sixth quality mentioned by Krishna as a demoniac quality is harshness. Harshness. Now that's very interesting, because generally we don't hear that, but here Krishna mentions that harshness is a demoniac quality. It's a quality which will ultimately bring out our lower nature, and it's a quality which will ultimately lead to destruction of one's own life and destruction around them. If we think about Sringi, Sringi represents harshness. The Bhagavatam was born out of Sringi's harshness. And when we look at Sringi's conduct, and if we're introspective, then we'll see the harshness of Sringi maybe within ourselves. The Bhagavatam was born out of harshness. It reveals to us our own harshness. But thankfully, the Bhagavatam is also purifying us of our harshness if we're able to understand these lessons that are given through these divine pages of Bhagavatam. Sringi's harshness was characterized by a few things when you read this pastime. And we can all do some reflection in the last week. I've also done this reflection on myself and found myself guilty. But we can do our reflection on this and ask ourselves, have I been harsh? Have I been harsh towards someone else? And if we look at Sringi's pastime, then it becomes very, very evident how harshness manifests. The first thing, the first mistake, the first blunder, the first pitfall that Sringi fell to was impulsiveness. When you act impulsively, there is a very good chance you will be acting harshly. Because when you act impulsively, you're not giving yourself time to understand the situation. But another interesting thing that we know, when you're angry, don't say something immediately. That's a general thing, like 101, anger management. But there's another interesting thing that happens when we act impulsively. Not only do we not give ourselves time to understand the situation, but we don't give the other person time to also understand the situation, the other person who may have made a mistake. When Parikshit put the snake around Shamik Rishi and he walked away, what's the first thing that he did? Does anyone remember from the past time? He put the snake around Shamik Rishi and he left. And then what does the Bhagavatam say he did next? He reconsidered his position. And he immediately began to think, oh, maybe I made a mistake. And as he contemplated more and more, then he realized, oh my God, because of this, something's going to happen to me now. The interesting thing is, Parikshit, we can't predict what would have happened if Sringi didn't curse him. But the interesting thing is that Parikshit himself would have come to the conclusion that I've made a mistake. But what happens is when we act impulsively, neither we give ourselves time to think, nor we give the other person time to think for them to understand, oh, maybe I've made a mistake. So say, for example, I commit a mistake to Mohan, and then Mohan just impulsively corrects me. Then what he's not allowed me to do is given me my time and headspace to maybe come to the conclusion myself of my mistake. But when he impulsively reacts to me, then my false ego comes up and then I may not be able to realize my mistake. So, harshness and the subsequent difficulties of it are first born when we act impulsively. Not only did Sringi act impulsively, but he acted skeptically. Skeptically means when we see something or see someone, we're programmed in one or two ways. Some people are programmed to think the best, and other people are programmed to think the worst. When we see someone make a mistake or see someone act in a way which is bewildering, are we programmed to give them the benefit of the doubt? Or are we programmed to find a fault? Sringi, when he saw Parikshit do this, or he heard of Parikshit doing this, what did he immediately conclude? Parikshit is a rogue. He's like a crow. He's like, he signifies the degradation of the entire Kshatriya order. He just starts making all these accusations. Always thinking the worst. Thinking the worst immediately, that it was some not trying to understand the situation, not trying to understand what may have been around it, not appreciating that Parikshit was a Raja Rishi. In the Bhagavatam, you find this Sanskrit terminology again, Pritag Darshi, or Pritag Bhava. Does anyone know what the word Pritag means? Pritag means difference or separatist. One of the main reasons why we're very, very harsh in our life is because we're trained to see difference. We're trained to be separatists by material mentality. So that person's different from me. That person's separate from me. because we're trained to see difference, when we see something that doesn't quite fit with our conception, we immediately judge the worst. So the second problem that Sringi did was that he acted skeptically. He thought the worst. The third thing that mistake that he made was that not only did he act impulsively, not only did he act skeptically, but he acted disproportionately. Even if it was a mistake, even if it was a transgression of culture that Parikshit put the snake around Shamik Rishi, how big was that compared to all the other amazing things that Parikshit had done? Here is Sringi accusing Parikshit of being a Kshatriya upstart because he's put a snake on Shamik Rishi. But what he didn't see was that this same Parikshit Maharaj had been going around the kingdom driving out Kali, had been going around the kingdom protecting the cows, the brahmanas, the bull dharma. That Parikshit Maharaj was such a king that in his presence nothing could enter in order to destroy Varnashram culture. He didn't see that. All he did was he saw a dead snake being put around his father's neck, and he forgot all of the other amazing things that Parikshit had done. When we act disproportionately, then we're again ushered into the realms of harshness. And then the fourth mistake that Sringi made is that he acted counterproductively. Because Parikshit may have made a mistake, but what Sringi did by his reaction was that he made the mistake even bigger. And now as we read these coming verses, we'll see that Sringi was trying to redress the situation so that the Kshatriyas would be elevated and that the Brahmanas would be protected. But what was the result of Sringi's reaction? The Kshatriya regime was destroyed, the monarchical regime was destroyed, and not only that, the Brahmanas became degraded. So in his impulsive, skeptical, disproportionate reaction, he ultimately acted counterproductively, and therefore was harsh. Now it's very, very humbling because you look at it and then you begin to think, oh my God, there may be, maybe, just maybe, there may be an inner Sringi within me. Because maybe we can just think of an incident in our life, an interaction, where maybe we acted impulsively. Maybe we acted skeptically. Maybe we acted disproportionately. And maybe we acted counterproductively. And if we put a tick by any of those factors, then we can immediately understand I have been brought into the realms of harshness. And what does Krishna say? Partha sampadam asurim. This is asuri sampad. This is the asuri bhav, this demoniac behavior. Therefore, then it creates a demoniac mentality and it creates a demoniac effect around us. So Sringi represents inner harshness. And as we read this pastime, we're humbled because we realize that this inner harshness is within us. Now Parikshit, he was so graceful. He was the complete opposite. And how did he react? He reacted completely differently. Bhagavatam explains the glories of Parikshit and the glories of the devotees like Parikshit. tiraskrita vipralabdha kshapta kshipta hata api nasyatat pratikurvanti tad bhakta prabhavo pihi. What does Bhagavatam say? Tiraskrita, devotees may be defamed. Vipralabdha, devotees may be cheated. Kshapta, devotees may be cursed. Shipta, devotees may be neglected. Hata, devotees may even be attacked and killed. Nasyatat pratikurvanti, but they are never inclined to try and take revenge. Tad bhakta prabhavopihi, this is the very svabhav. This is the very svarup lakshan of a Vaishnav. That whether they are neglected, cheated, defamed, they are never inclined to take revenge. That was Parikshit. He was not being drawn into the harshness that Sringi represented. Sometimes in our life, someone's maya, someone's conditioning, someone's anartas are manifested before us. And then what immediately happens is that their maya awakens our maya. Their anartas awaken our own anartas. Their conditionings ignite our own conditionings. But Parikshit was so powerful, and so graceful, so incredibly spiritually deep, that even though he was subjected to such harshness by Sringi, he was never brought into that world. Rather, what did he do? Atmajaya sutagara pashudra vinabandushu raje cha vikale nityam virudham mamatam jaho. He said, today Krishna has come to me, but Krishna has come to me today in a different form, to give me a different message. And what did he do? Atma gave up his body. Jaya gave up his wife. Suta gave up his children. Gada gave up his palace. Pashu gave up his horses and elephants. Dravina gave up his treasury. Bandushu gave up his friends, family, all his social ties. Raje cha vikale nityam, he gave up his entire identity. Virudham mamatam jaho, and just took shelter of Krishna and just left. Just walked away, just let go. Did not again become entangled in a dogfight. That is spiritual consciousness. That is incredible detachment which only comes from spiritual depth. So here in this verse, what's being mentioned is that not only was Sringi harsh, but Sringi was harsh towards perhaps the most qualified person. And because Sringi was harsh towards the most qualified spiritual person, he created a huge problem in the world. And the subsequent verses will explain what happens when a qualified leader like Parikshit is treated in this way. Srila Prabhupada's purports are incredible because Srila Prabhupada is giving very, very powerful points. Srila Prabhupada is so eloquent. Kaviraj Goswami says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, mitam chasaram chavacho hi vagmita. Mitam chasaram chavacho hi vagmita. True eloquence is essential truth spoken concisely. Now, if you look at Prabhupada's purport, I was reading this morning and I was like, wow. In this one line, Srila Prabhupada basically explains, he's in this purport and verse, he's talking about the glory of monarchical regime. And what he explains is what makes an ideal leader. And in one verse, Prabhupada basically summarizes the whole thing. If you want to know who is an ideal king, who is an ideal leader, here it is, Prabhupada says in one verse, in one line. An ideal king thoroughly trained by culture and devotional service with the martial spirit, makes a perfect king. Shishiradha Gokulananda ki jai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai. So here it is, within one line. If you want to be a leader, if you want to take that service of helping others in that way, this is what one has to become. Prabhupada says, I'll repeat it again, an ideal king thoroughly trained by culture and devotional service with the martial spirit makes a perfect king. So there, in this verse, Prabhupada has ingeniously explained why Parikshit was so amazing. To be a leader, one requires culture. You have to have sensitivity. Not only that, one requires devotional spirit, spirituality, genuine spiritual depth. And not only that, martial spirit. To be a leader, one must have strength. This is leadership. This is why Parikshit was so powerful. He was sensitive, he was spiritual, and he was strong. If you find someone who's got that combination, surrender to them. Because they are an ideal. Don't curse them. Boy, please don't curse them. Because that is the kind of leadership that is required within society. It's very interesting when you read the Mahabharata, then we read about how Pandu got cursed by Kindama Rishi. And then there was obviously a huge dilemma as to how they would create progeny for the future of society. It was resting on Pandu to create the future leaders of society. So how would they do it? And then Kunti raised the point that, yes, I received this boon from Durvasa Muni that I can summon the gods and have children. So when they decided to do that, who was the first god that they summoned? Suryadev, yeah, after that, in the forest. Who was the first god? Yamaraj. Yamaraj was summoned, and from Yamaraj came Yudhisthira. Yudhisthira came from Yamaraj. Yudhisthira was known as Dharmaraj. And if we look at Yudhisthira as a personality, what he basically signifies is great sensitivity, great culture, great dharma. After Yudhisthira was born and they decided to summon another god, who did they summon next? Vayu. And from Vayu came Bhim. Bhim was the embodiment of strength. And after Bhima was born, who did they summon next? Indra. And from Indra, who's the foremost of the demigods, Arjun was born. And as we know, Arjun was the embodiment of spirituality, his relationship with Krishna. Very, very close. So when you look deeply at the Mahabharata, it's not random. It's not random that those three gods were called and those three children were born with those three qualities, because those are the three qualities which are required in order to lead. The sensitivity of Yudhisthira, the strength of Bhima, and the spirituality of Arjuna. That is the perfect monarchical regime. Yudhisthira was so sensitive. He was Yudhisthira. Sthira means steady. So Yudhisthira, one meaning of his name is one who is steady in war. But it also means one who is also steady in virtue. Yudhisthira was someone who, despite whatever situation may come, he would never give up virtue. He was always maintaining dharma. In fact, when, you know, the Pandavas are in exile and they go to this lake of death to kind of drink water, and then four of the Pandavas die, and then Yudhisthira goes, and then the Yaksha arrives and says, you know, don't drink, these guys are all dead and you'll have the same fate unless you answer all my questions. And then what did Yudhisthira do? He answered all the questions perfectly. What is the most amazing thing in the world? Ahani ahani bhutani gachanti hayamalayam sheshastavaramichanti kimascharyam ataparam. He gives all these beautiful answers. The most amazing thing is that everyone's dying, but we think we're going to live forever. And like this, he gives many. What can be more heavier than the earth? A mother's love, you know. All these answers he gives. Anyway, at the end of it, the Yaksha looks at him and says, you can have one boon. You can bring one of your brothers back alive. So who are you going to choose? You got like... And you know, there could be a big war coming up. By the way, there's a huge war that's about to come up. Right? Who are you going to choose? Arjun, Bhima, Nakula, or Sahadev? Who would you choose, Mohan? Arjun. Good choice. Not the choice that Yudhisthira went for. Who did Yudhisthira choose? He said, you can have one son, to, I'll revitalize him. Who will you choose? Akula, Sahadev, Bhima. Okay, everyone's got different answers. He chose Nakul. Why Nakul? Why not Bhima? Why not Arjun? Why Nakul? What was the reason? Madri? The Yaksha looked at him and he said, all of the sons, you pick Nakul? Why would you pick Nakul? And you know what Yudhisthira's answer was? He says, my mother is Kunti. And she has one son alive, me. But her co-wife Madri, if I choose Arjun or Bhim, she'll have no sons. I don't want her to go through that pain. She should at least have one son. Yaksha looked at Yudhisthira and said, your dharma is out of this world. You know what? I'll bring them all alive. And then the famous verse comes. Dharma rakshita. Dharma rakshati rakshita. That's when that famous verse from the Manusmriti comes. That one who protects dharma, dharma will protect them. That was Yudhisthira, so sensitive, so ethical, so dharmic. However, it got him into problems as well. After Yudhisthira had done the Rajasuya sacrifice, the Pandavas were flourishing like anything. And then Vyasadeva came to the Pandavas after the Rajasuya. And you know what Vyasadeva said to Yudhisthira? Everything was amazing in Indraprastha. But Vyasadeva came to Yudhisthira and said, everything's really, really good. However, in 13 years, there's going to be a huge war. And all of you are going to be, and everyone's going to die. But after that, the monarchical regime will be reestablished. But it's going to be a war, like a war that the world has never seen before. So Vyasadeva said this to Yudhisthira. So you know what Yudhisthira did at that time? He said, from now on I will act in such a way as to never be harsh, never be strong, never get engaged in any kind of argument, because that is where violence and war comes from. And maybe by doing this, I will be able to divert the war. However, that sensitivity by itself is not enough. Therefore, sensitivity is good in a leader, but it needs more other factors as well. Therefore, Bhima was also there, strong. A leader must be strong. Bhima we think of as obviously physically very strong. He was physically very, very strong. In exile, you see these pictures of the Mahabharata, like when they're in exile and like everyone is tired in the forest, and like Bhima's like carrying all five of them like through the forest. Very nice pictures. So Bhima was like that, very, very strong, very fierce, very formidable. I mean, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, when Bhima was killing the opponents, even the Pandavas were scared. Even the Pandavas were like, whoa, this is too much. Like Bhima was fierce. He would be ripping people and like... So anyway, let's take the principle of it. The principle is that there is a sense in which a leader needs to be strong. Leadership means you require resilience. Leadership means you require staying power. Leadership means that when there is resistance, you're able to hold your ground. Leadership means when people criticize, you're able to still continue on and not be affected by negativity. Prabhupada was so strong as a leader, wasn't he? So strong. Prabhupada said, I'm getting attacked from all places. In Vrindavan, I'm getting attacked by the Goswamis. In Mayapur, I'm getting attacked by the Gaudiya Math. In Bombay, I'm getting attacked by the municipality. In the Western world, I'm getting attacked by the media. Everywhere I go, I'm getting attacked. But Prabhupada never threw in the towel. Prabhupada never gave up. Prabhupada never put his hands up and he fought. Just like now, Giriraj Maharaj's book has come out about Juhu. And it's beautiful how at the end of that whole Juhu fight, I think Prabhupada said to Giriraj Maharaj, he said, it was a good fight. And one day someone should write a book about it. And Giriraj Maharaj did, has just come out. You've got to be strong. And ultimately, leadership only works if the leader is also spiritual. Arjun was almost the representation of spirituality. He had such a close relationship with Krishna. Sometimes it's asked, why did Krishna speak the Bhagavad Gita to Arjun? Why not the other Pandavas? What was so special about Arjun? There could be many, many answers. We could say, well, Arjun was the one who had the breakdown, the nervous breakdown. The existential crisis, therefore Krishna spoke to him. Yep, that could be a reason. We could also say Krishna spoke the Gita specifically to Arjun because no one had more ability and achievement than Arjun. But Krishna wanted to show that you can have all the abilities and all the achievement in the world, but you'll still become bewildered if you don't have spiritual knowledge. And therefore, maybe that's why Krishna spoke it to Arjun. Arjun was ultimately Krishna's friend and devotee. Bhakto sime sakacheti rahasyam hyatadutamam. Krishna says, you can understand this science because you're my friend and you're my devotee. And we can say that is also the reason why Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita to Arjun. In Gopal Champu, Jiva Goswami gives another reason why Arjun was specially dear to Krishna. Anyone know this? Arjun reminded Krishna of someone. This Jiva Goswami says this in Gopal Champu. Jiva Goswami says that there was many, many gopas in Vrindavan, but there was one gopa named Arjun. Arjun Gopa. There wasn't a Yudhisthira Gopa, there wasn't a Bhima Gopa, there wasn't a Nakul or a Sahadev Gopa, but there was an Arjun Gopa. So Krishna was especially inclined towards Arjun because whenever he would see Arjun and hear Arjun's name, then he would always think of Arjun Gopa, and in that way he would be reminded of Vrindavan. And if you can remind Krishna of Vrindavan, then you become very dear to Krishna. So Arjun was so close to Krishna. And therefore, this is someone who has this closeness to Krishna, someone who has that deep spiritual connection with Krishna, is qualified for leadership. So here Prabhupada explains how Parikshit was an amazing leader because he had culture, he had sensitivity. Not only that, but he had a devotional spirit. He had deep spirituality. And not only that, he had a martial spirit. He was strong when it was required. And therefore, for Sringi to curse him, in his harshness for Sringi to curse him was perhaps the greatest misjustice, the greatest harshness. And therefore I also try to share with you a little bit about harshness, because we are so much apt to fall into the lower nature of becoming harsh with others. And therefore Parikshit reminds us, if you act impulsively, you may be becoming harsh. If you act skeptically, you may be becoming harsh. If you act disproportionately, you may be becoming harsh. And if you act in a counterproductively, then you may be becoming harsh. And Bhartasam Padamasurim, this is lower nature, demoniac nature, that we must try to avoid. So here are some, these are some thoughts I wanted to share with you on Sringi, Sringi's harshness, and why his harshness was directed towards Parikshit, who was an ideal king. An ideal king has certain qualities, and because Sringi directed his harshness towards a perfect person, then it signified doom in the world. And these are some points that all of us should be aware of. Hare Krishna. So if anyone has any questions, comments, yes.
Just one key point. Sringi, in 1838, he went back to the hermitage to see his father. He says, you know, after hearing about what happened. But he says, thereafter the boy returned to the hermitage and saw the snake on his father's shoulder. And out of grief, he cried loudly. Then Prabhupada explained why he cried. The boy was not happy because he had committed a great mistake and wanted to be relieved of the burden on his heart by crying. So entering the hermitage and seeing his father, he cried loudly that he might be relieved. But too late, the father regretted the whole incident. So Sringi also realized in his after thoughts and emotions that actually he'd made a mistake himself. And that's another interesting aspect, that somehow he'd had some contemplation himself, or it came upon him at that moment when he saw his father, and that it sort of awakened his position and what he'd done. So he wasn't as though... he wasn't subject to that understanding as well. You know,
yeah.
He thought about it too. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you for your class, Prabhu. My question is, how can we be more like Parikshit in that when we're on the receiving end of something that seems harsh, how can we accept it in a tolerant mood?
Just do the opposite. Do the opposite of everything Sringi did. Don't be impulsive. Wait. Give yourself time. Second thing, don't be skeptical. Like always, try to understand circumstance, context, situation. Try to understand someone's heart. Right? Sometimes we try to understand people's actions, but we don't try to understand their heart. How much weight are you putting on the action, and how much weight are you putting on the heart? Third thing is, don't act disproportionately. Factor in whatever harshness they're throwing towards you, factor it in with all the other good things that they've done. The other good things that they've contributed in your life. The other good things that they've contributed to society. There's one leadership book I read. Not all of it, a bit of it. It's called Catch Your People Doing Something Right. And the whole kind of thrust of this author is that whenever we see something bad, we always say it. But when we see something good, we never verbalize it. We're like, oh yeah, it was good. But it takes something to say like, oh Prabhu, that was good, you know. But what happens is when you verbalize something, then it becomes more prominent in your consciousness. So if you verbalize all the good things that someone has done, then the moment when you come across some bad thing that they've done, because you verbalize the good things that have become implanted in your mind, you're able to have more context when you see a bad thing and not overreact, not be over harsh. Therefore, when people are harsh towards you, just do the opposite of what Sringi did. But how do you do that? It's difficult because there's so many emotions. And the only way to overcome emotion is to be established on the spiritual platform. So ultimately we can say, don't be impulsive, don't be skeptical, don't be disproportionate. But it will only ever really work if we're connected with Krishna. Because that gives you the vantage point from which to step back and see the whole thing. Otherwise you just get drawn into the dogfight.
Thank you, Prabhu, for your class. You quickly mentioned that others' anarthas influence us and ignite our own anarthas. Can you maybe explain how we can avoid that? How can we deal with it? That we don't get influenced.
One of the most important things, one of the most unfortunate things is that we take things very, very personally. You see? When someone is negative or irrational or harsh towards us, we think it's something between us and them. It's personal towards me. But 90% of the time, it may be nothing to do with you. You're just on the receiving end of it. It's just someone going through what they're going through. And you just happen to be on the receiving end of it. One of the reasons that our anarthas come out when other people display their anarthas is because we take it personally. We think it's an attack against us. Right? So that's one reason. So we need to stop taking things so personally, even when we're on the receiving end of misjustice. The second thing is, we need to understand that it's coming for a reason. Right? We always talk about this, right? So I'm going through this, I'm not just a passive victim. I am an active agent why I'm actually receiving this. You have to make that shift in consciousness. If you know that, then you will take someone's anarthas as a means for yourself to be purified and elevated. Yeah, it's like there's that story of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur who would walk down to the Jalangi every day, and there would be this boatman or someone, and he would just be, "Ah, oh, you sadhus, why don't you do something useful?" Like every time, he would just like. And then one day they went there, and he wasn't there. So then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, "Where is he?" He said, no, he passed away. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, "Oh no, he was my friend. He was my friend." He said he was reminding me. He was reminding me of all the things I shouldn't do. He was elevating me by his. How you will be able to take someone's critical mentality, someone's harsh mentality, and use it to purify and elevate yourself, that is Vaishnav. So all these things can be there. We have to understand, we have to be able to see in a bigger context. Someone's anarthas will awaken our anarthas when our vision is very, very limited. We have to develop broader vision. Then it will be possible. There's much more we can say, but.
Hare Krishna. Thanks so much for the class. You quoted the statement that Prabhupada made, and he was talking about Lida, and you mentioned martial spirit. I just wanted to ask how we can probably work on cultivating this martial spirit within ourselves, seeing that at times we want, you know, to be comfortable and to progress gradually, but that martial push might somewhat be there. So just wondering if you could share something on how we can cultivate that spirit.
We were once in, we were doing some training, leadership training in Govardhan Eco Village, and Dev Ramita Maharaj came and gave a talk, and someone asked him a question like, what's the best service you can do? And he said, the best service is the one that forces you to cry out to Krishna for help. We have to be balanced, but we have to take up responsibility. We have to take up services. We have to take up something which forces us to depend on Krishna, which forces us to elevate our consciousness, which forces us to become more Krishna conscious in order to do that service. Every service that you do is just a preparation for a bigger service in the future. That is the vision of a progressive Vaishnava. And so, as long as one is always growing in that way, you see, a lot of spiritual life is just where you place yourself, where you position yourself, you see. Where do you position yourself in the Vaishnava Sangha? Who do you surround yourself with? That's going to make a big difference. Where do you place yourself in the service arena to do something for Prabhupada? Where are you positioning yourself? That's then going to grow you in a certain way. Because once you position yourself, there's a certain energy that's going to carry you. Right? So, even I've noticed in a kirtan, you have to position yourself in the right place. If you're in the right, I mean, ultimately if you're in consciousness, it doesn't matter. But there's a nice place to be in a kirtan, which can help you to get more tuned in, right? So a lot of spiritual life is not just what you do, but it's where you position yourself. And so think ingeniously about where you can position yourself in this movement, in your devotional service, in what association, and then you will grow. They will take you. But often we are not positioning ourselves. We are keeping two chevrons apart. Isn't it? On the motorway they have that. Keep two chevrons apart. So there's certain devotees, you know, they're really, really serious, they're really nice, but keep two chevrons apart because I don't want to be too close because they'll bring me into their intensity. I don't know if I'm ready for that, you know. That's a nice service, but keep two chevrons apart because I don't know if I'm ready for that, you know. So you don't position yourself. If you don't position yourself in the right place, then you see, like when you go into the Ganga, when you initially go into the Ganga, don't try this by the way, but when you go in, it's pushing you back. You can't go in. You have to be a good swimmer. But there's a certain point which when you get through that and you reach into the Ganga, there's an undercurrent, and then you go voom. You go straight in like whoosh. That's why people drown in the Ganga. Because they're pushing, 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 and then you break through and then the current takes you. But spiritual life is like that. In the beginning, to position yourself in the right place, it takes a lot of pushing. To come to the point of saying, okay, I'm going to take up this responsibility. I'm going to take up this service. I'm going to dedicate myself to this person or these Vaishnavas. And it takes a push. But then once you're in there, it will carry you. I don't know if I answered your question, but anyway, that's what came to my mind. So. Yes.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for an amazing class. I wanted to ask one point. So you said that we can use someone's critical mentality to purify ourselves, to think that, yes, how I understood that we shouldn't do it ourselves. But I was wondering, is it then the right attitude just to stay in this situation and not to say anything and try to have the right attitude of, like you said, that to purify, to understand that I shouldn't be doing that. But so should we just stay on in this situation, or perhaps we can express that this is actually disturbing for us to hear that? Because I was wondering, then what's the hope for this person? When will they, how will they understand that this is not right? So what's your thoughts?
Yeah, in anything in Krishna consciousness, there's a practical response and there's an internal meditation. So the practical response, if someone is critical towards you, is to address it in an appropriate way. Make sure what you're saying is accurate in terms of feedback. Make sure the time is right when you're giving that feedback. Make sure the person who's giving that feedback is the right person to give the feedback. Make sure the motivation in which you're giving that feedback is right. Then the feedback will have the most opportunity of penetrating that person's heart. So by all means, you must give feedback. That is, otherwise how we will improve. However, we must take responsibility. We must know this is something I needed to experience, something I needed to grow from, something I needed to learn and edify my own consciousness from. Because you can be completely right and miss the lesson that Krishna is trying to give you. Well, not you, me, anyone. So yes, in anything, there's a practical response and there's an internal meditation. And internally, we must realize that, why is this happening to me? What am I supposed to learn from it? Is Krishna giving me a message through this? And then outside of that, yeah, we give the feedback and deal with it appropriately. In any interaction between two people, there's two things happening. There's the use of free will of someone, and there's the internal karmic thing that someone else is going through. So on this person's side, they have to make sure they understand the internal karmic thing that they need to be learning. And on this person's side, they have to be educated about how to use their free will in a more appropriate way. So both things have to be there. And then,
thank you, Prabhu. From my understanding, this harshness is also connected to the heart. And I notice sometimes, as I'm speaking or listening to people or even to classes, there's like this very brutal necessity to say something. And which might manifest as harshness. And it seems it's within, we are like completely convicted that we have our idea is the supreme idea, and we like want to push that forward. So my question is, how can we reduce that harshness, that hard-hearted? Yeah. How can become soft-hearted and willing to listen?
Yeah, it's very... harshness and lack of sensitivity is a result of offenses, right? That's like, it's like King Indradyumna, Agastya Rishi came to his ashram and he didn't receive him appropriately. And what happened in the next life? He became who? Gajendra. So like an elephant. If you think of an elephant as an animal, it's not the most like sensitive animal, right? Like an elephant is walking and it's like it doesn't even know the destruction that it's creating. So sometimes when I think like, oh my God, like I'm just an elephant, you know, it's walking around, you know. It's that's insensitivity. The elephant is representing a very hard, kind of insensitive, harsh kind of... and yeah, we don't have a soft heart. That's the problem. Therefore, Bhagavatam says... Tadasmasaram ridayam batedam yad griyamanair harinamadhyayai. Na vikriyeta tadayada vikaro netre jalam gatra ruheshu harsha. That anyone who, when they chant the holy name, na vikriyeta, if there's no transformation of the heart, netre jalam gatra ruheshu harsha, if the eyes don't produce tears, if the hairs don't stand on end, then it must be concluded that one is having a heart which is steel framed. So ultimately, yes, you're right. Harshness comes because of a hard heart. So how do we break down? How do we soften that heart? By service. Ultimately, it can only be service. Service is softening one's heart, because through service we develop relationship. And through relationship there is exchange of emotion. And through that exchange of emotion, the heart becomes a more fertile place and a more sensitive place. So we must serve, we must go out, we must be selfless. We must be compassionate. That is the way. Sometimes I feel like, and I'll probably end on this point, Sankirtan for me, like going out on book distribution, was like, I felt it did more for developing a soft heart than anything else, you know? Because just that selfless spirit of trying to be compassionate, trying to be concerned about others, trying to undergo whatever needs to be done in order to reach out, reach others, is very, very beautiful. Maybe you didn't cry, feel so emotional in a kirtan or feel so emotional in front of the deities, but many times I felt very emotional on Sankirtan. Because there's a special softness and a special feeling that comes out when we're in the mood of service and giving and sacrificing and being compassionate. So, yeah, that is perhaps something we can focus on doing more. Thank you so much for your kind attention. Grantharaj, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.